Good evening. Here is the news for parrots.
Welcome to Chat with a Cat, episode 11. This episode is being recorded following the final sim of the regular season of season 2. That's the 1981-82 season. So we have clarity on who is in the playoffs. We'll talk a little bit about playoff seeding and playoff matchups. And after that, just some general reactions to the season. And as promised, I wanted to do a brief free agent preview. So let's jump in and let's get to it. Today's sim saw the regular season finish. In the Eastern Conference, your number one seed are the Bucks, who finished with 60 wins. The Knicks are your second seed with 54. Pacers at 53, Cavs 52, Bullets 48, Bulls 43. While out west, the Trailblazers finished with 59 wins to take the number one seed. The Kings finished with 56 wins to take the number two seed. Nuggets 3 at 55 wins, Warriors 4 at 53 wins, Suns 5 at 47 wins, and the Jazz 6 at 46 wins. One of the things that this immediately tells me is the only reason we might have a record tiebreaker in the playoffs for home court is if the Pacers and the Warriors meet in the finals, as both have 53 wins, but otherwise every team has a unique win total. So that's a little bit fun to watch. One other thing to mention slash be aware of is that the way the fast break engine runs draft picks, other than obviously the lottery, is it goes first by non-playoff teams, then by playoff teams in inverse order of record. Note that if there is a tie for record, which in this case would be the Spurs and Mavericks tied at 33 wins, and the Lakers and Celtics tied at 38 wins, it does a coin flip. However, the coin flip it is doing right now, as it were, to display the draft order whereby the Mavericks are picking 7th, the Rockets are picking 8th, and the Lakers pick held by the Bullets is going 10th, and the Celtics is going 11th, is not necessarily how that coin flip will be finally determined. The Mavericks and Spurs are 6 and 7. The Spurs pick is held by the Pistons. Threw me for a second there. But what that means is, regardless of the lotto results, it would be possible when the lottery is run and those coin flips are finalized for the 10 and 11 picks to swap hands and the 6 and 7 picks to swap hands without any lottery interference. And again, that's because those teams tied. There's a preliminary tiebreak that is used to display, but the final tiebreak isn't put in stone until the draft lotto is run. So if you are the Pistons owning the Spurs pick, the Mavericks, the Bullets owning the Lakers pick, or the Celtics, be mindful that there is a possibility those picks could move up or down one spot. You'll find out in the draft lotto what the final placement is. I don't think this came up last year, but it has come up in the past, so I figure it's always good to put it out there to explain things in advance of them happening rather than after them happening, because we have seen that in the past where two teams will be tied and there will be a coin flip to figure out, you know, who gets the better draft position. Similarly, the Warriors and Pacers are currently sitting in the 18 slot for the Warriors, 17 slot for the Pacers, but it's possible that there could be a coin flip. And parenthetically, this also means that playoff finish has no effect on draft order. And you may have noticed last year when the Nets won it all, they still picked in the teens. They didn't get bumped back to the 23rd pick. I think the NFL does it where the Super Bowl winner always picks last. That is not the case in the NBA, nor is it the case in fast break leagues like the NBPSL or NPBSL. Whoever finished with the best record in the regular season gets the final draft pick. So this year that was the Bucks, They have the 23rd pick, although, you know, of course that pick belongs to the Knicks, but even if someone else were to win the championship, that pick isn't moving. So in terms of picks that could move, obviously any of the lotto picks can jump up to the top. Any of the picks currently in 1, 2, 3 could be bumped down by the lotto jump of somebody else. But then again, there are coin flips between the Spurs pick held by the Pistons and the Mavericks, the Lakers pick held by the Bullets and the Celtics, and the Pacers and Warriors, based on tied record, could see a tiny bit of flip-flopping. And again, I just wanted to make sure that that's out there before we see it happen so that, you know, we can forestall any potential panic. So real quick, one of the first things I noticed when I looked at the playoff bracket is the Western Conference Finals are going to be the Pacific versus the Midwest, because everybody on the 1-4-5 side of the bracket is a Pacific team. Everybody on the 3-6-2 side of the bracket is a Midwest team. That's not the case in the East. You might see two Central teams or two Atlantic teams make it there. So obviously the Blazers, Kings, Knicks, and Bucks have first round byes. We can expect they're going to advance. The Warriors and the Suns are matched up in the West at the 4-5. This is an interesting one. It's the clash of the purple potential superstars in Magic and Moses. Magic wound up edging out Moses for league MVP. I do think the Warriors have the slightly better team, which I guess is borne out by the fact that they finished with 53 wins. The Suns finished with 47. There were no major injuries to either team that I could discern, so I think you know, what you see is what you get. So for that reason, I suspect the Warriors are going to top the Suns and move on. I know it's a chalk pick. It's kind of boring, but, you know, that is what it is. Similarly, with the Nuggets Jazz, last season, Kiki Vandeweghe was out most of the year for the Jazz, and they missed the playoffs. This year, he's back, but they only were able to get to 46 wins, whereas the Nuggets were at 55 wins and just barely missed catching the Kings. I don't think, as I look at it, they would have won the tiebreaker even had they won their game with the Lakers. The Kings won enough games down the stretch that even had the Nuggets been able to catch them, they did win their individual matchup. Unless I guess they had lost against the Rockets or the Jazz, but once they got to the 13th and they beat the Jazz, oh, they had a game against the Mavericks. So once they got to the 18th and beat the Mavericks, that basically locked them in. They had the division tiebreak, so even if they lost one more game after that, the Nuggets wouldn't have been able to catch them. So congratulations to the Kings on locking up the Midwest division. But that brings us to Nuggets versus Jazz, and the Nuggets finished 9 games ahead of the Jazz. I think there's a reason for that. I do believe the Nuggets are the stronger team, and they will advance to meet the Kings in the second round. That series is going to be a war. I think that series is a coin flip. Honestly, I think the Trailblazers-Warriors series would be a coin flip simply because the Trailblazers do not have a matchup for Moses Malone. It's just a fact. We don't. I don't think anybody has a matchup for Moses Malone. I think I'm glad to have home court, but am I counting on that to win the series? I'm not. In the East, you have the Pacers versus the Bulls. The Bulls did pick up an injury this last sim to Kevin Porter, but he's playing backup point guard. He's shooting 40%, so it's not like they're going to miss his 15 minutes a game anyway. So I think essentially you can look at these teams as coming in at full strength. The Bulls finished with 43 wins, but the Pacers finished with 53 wins and have been one of the strongest teams in the league for 2 seasons now. I know it's boring. I'm going chalk here, but I think the Pacers move on past the Bulls to have a showdown with the Knicks. In the 4-5 slot, you have the Cavaliers versus the Bullets. The Cavaliers had a pretty consistent season. The Bullets were a little bit up and down, and I know the Calvin Natt trade, I think, kind of hurt their chances to wrap up a higher seed. I would like the Bullets a little bit better had they been able to hold on and get home court. But against the Cavaliers, they're going to be playing without home court and against a backcourt that has 2 all-league players in Jim Paxton and Sidney Moncrief. And I don't think the addition of the bullets at the trade deadline of Jack Sikma is going to be enough to offset that. As I mentioned in my previous pod, I think Jack Sikma is a solid guy, but does not have a high ceiling. And so because of that, again, I would pick the Cavaliers to move on against the Bucks. That would set up second round matchups of the Trailblazers and Warriors. I think it's a coin flip. I'm going to pick the Warriors, not to jinx them, but just because I know how the Trailblazers are constructed and I think it's a very poor matchup for them. I kind of would have preferred to face the Suns because I think the matchup is better. But, again, I get what I get, so I'm going to say the Warriors move on in that one. In the second round, it would be Nuggets versus Kings. Again, that's a coin flip. I'll give it to the Kings, but only because of home court advantage, and I think it's like a 3-point, 4-point win in Game 7. In the second round for the Eastern Conference, you'd have Knicks versus Pacers. Here, I can see an upset. The Knicks started hot, but they've been kind of wobbly since. The Pacers have been a consistent force, so I see the Pacers managing to knock the Knicks out and moving on. I don't think the Knicks can slow down Joe Barry Carroll and Adrian Dantley. I don't know how long the Pacers can compete with just those two players. I think they need to get some more help in there, but at least for now, I think that's enough to push them past the Knicks. And the 1-4 would be the Cavaliers versus the Bucks. It's the Cavaliers' exceptional backcourt versus the Bucks' exceptional frontcourt. And we're in an era where I think the big man is important, so I would pick the Bucks to move forward, which would put the conference finals between the Warriors and the Kings. I think the Kings win that one. The Kings, I think, match up better with the Warriors than the Trailblazers do, especially with the use of Calvin Knapp. The Kings have an unstoppable offensive force similar to Moses Malone, which the Trailblazers don't really have. So I would give that one to the Kings based on Calvin Knapp and based on having home court. For the conference finals in the East, you have the Pacers versus the Bucks. And the Bucks have been holding the Pacers at arm's length all season. I don't see why that would change. I'll take the Bucks to go on to the finals, which would set up a Kings-Bucks finals. And again, here, I think the Bucks have been the consistently stronger team. I think I would favor the Bucks to win it. But, again, it would be close. But having to go on the road in Milwaukee is a tall order. I don't think the Kings will be able to get enough road wins to finish off the Bucks. So with that, we're now to the point where we're going to take a quick break because this next segment is going to be probably a little longer than the first as we break down the upcoming free agent class. I have thoughts, and since I have a podcast, you're going to have to suffer through them. So we'll be back shortly.
Coming this fall from Spiemann Films. He's one of New York City's finest, hardened by a life in the streets busting pimps, hookers, and two-bit thugs. His partner is a wisecracking astrophysicist, confined to a wheelchair, but with a mind as limitless as the cosmos. Together, they're Branniger and the Hawk.
Branniger, I'd like you to meet your new partner, Steve Hawk.
Hey, Chief, come on. This guy's in a wheelchair. Yeah, what did he say?
I think he said he eats guys like you for breakfast.
Oh, yeah? Hey, I like your style, Hawk.
Two men from different sides of the galaxy joining brains and brawn to fight the scum of the Earth.
Hey, Branniger, one move and I blow your friend out of his wheelchair. What did he say? He said, go ahead, make my millennium. Get him, Hawk. Hey, nice work, Hawk. Looks like I'm the handicapped one for not believing in you in the first place.
One's hell on Earth. One's hell on wheels. They're Branniger and the Hawk, coming to a theater near you.
Here at Arthur Daniels Heartland, we work every day to make your life livable in ways you don't appreciate. We make sure the sun comes up every morning. We get your children to school safely, and we print the books they use in class. We've put a man on the moon.
We have liftoff.
We've taken apart your lawnmower.
Hey, get away from that!
We're here to help you, despite what you've heard. We feed millions of people around the world, and we provide Wink Martindale's wardrobe. At ADH, we read your mail.
Oh.
Arthur Daniels Heartland. If we told you who we are, we'd have to kill you. So just keep moving along. There's nothing to see here. Go on. Go on. Get out. What are you looking at?
All right, so as promised, I wanted to take a quick, or maybe not so quick, look over free agency. I'm going to give a few disclaimers on my methods before I do this. I have restricted the players that I'm going to be talking about to exactly one player per team, because some teams have several players up for free agency, and I don't want them to feel like I'm picking on them and trying to rip their team apart. The second caveat I would say is, you know, we have exactly four blue potential players in the draft. Everyone will be looking at them. I'm not doing them. Do your own homework. You know, like I said, you've got four blue potential players. You can handle four. And so I'm not going to do anything on those four. I'm also not in the making of this preview. Going with who I think is the best player on each team or the best value from each team. What I have done is I have picked the green potential player from each team with the highest minutes played number. So that's the player that I think we have the biggest sample size on. And so we can describe as the best known quality or best known quantity in their current form. Now, bear in mind, some of these players do have room to improve. But if you're paying for production right now, what are you getting? One other caveat is that all calculations here were done as of the end of Sim 11. So it doesn't count the last week and a half or so of games, because that's when I had time to prepare. That's like 94% of the season anyway. But you know, the body of work is not going to meaningfully change for these players over the last four or five games. Also, so that you're aware on how am I evaluating these players, I'm evaluating them based on what I would call counting stats. That's points, assists, rebounds, steals, blocks on a per 36-minute basis. The reason I'm doing per 36 is how does this player project as a starter? Although I will occasionally check post-defense or perimeter defense ratings. Note that this means their production could be affected by some of their teammates. For example, playing with Moses Malone, who takes almost every shot, is going to suppress a player's scoring average. And I didn't check depth charts to see, you know, was this player named as a key player? Might that be artificially inflating their scoring average a little bit? And I would note that a caveat with per 36 stats, especially for some of these guys, is a lot of these players got substantial time off the bench. And so they're going to be playing against backups, so lesser quality opponents. So if you slot them into a starter, their per 36 numbers are not going to be as good because they're playing against better competition now. So, you know, also players' per minute production generally falls off over time. I didn't take stamina ratings into account here. You know, a player that's amazing in 10 minutes per game may be good in 15 minutes per game, and okay in 20 minutes per game, and awful in 35 minutes per game. So again, I'm trying to use this as some objective method so people can say, hey, Wig's not picking on me specifically. This is just what the numbers say. Final couple of disclaimers. There are some solid yellow players on the market, but again, do your own homework. And my disclaimer here is this should not be a substitute for doing your own scouting research. During the playoffs is a very good time to start getting ahead of free agency, especially for teams that are in the lottery. And once you've been eliminated from the playoffs, spend that time that you would have spent game planning against your opponent in the playoffs, game planning for free agency. But again, This is just a starting, jumping off point. Do your own homework. A couple of quick things that that I noted here. There were 21 overall players out of the 23 teams that fit into those criteria of only one player per team. And they had to be of green potential. That means there are no Nets and no Lakers on this list. So we only have 21 players. The other thing that I thought was interesting, there is one center on this list. There's six power forwards, three small forwards, seven shooting guards, four point guards. So what that means is true centers are underrepresented in the free agency class. Shooting guards are overrepresented in the free agency class. This means if you spot a player that you value at center when you are doing your research, you're probably going to have to overpay a little bit because the supply is so low. Similarly, when you spot a player you like among shooting guards, be careful of overpaying because you can probably get a similar player a little bit cheaper because the supply is high. One other note, even among the blue players, I did not spot any players that I think are definitely worth the max. And there's a reason for that. And that is that the, excuse me, the real star players in the league are not available in free agency yet. Remember, the players that are coming up for free agency this season were players picked in round four and later in the creation draft, which generally means the high-grade starters are there. These guys are probably fourth and fifth starters at best. And some of these guys are competing with the rookie class that just came out. You know, Mark Aguirre, Buck Williams, all of these guys that are in the rookie class are better than these players. There are some potential starters out there, but most of these guys are going to top out as your sixth man. As the next couple of drafts come into the league and bring more talent, none of these guys are game changers. I would keep my powder dry for the next two seasons when the real studs start to hit the market. And then one general note on free agency, if you pay attention to player pages, you'll note every single player here has at most two bird years because the league has only been in existence for 2 years. That means none of these players have bird rights. You can't go over the cap to bring back your own players. So be careful submitting large bids for other people and thinking, oh, I'll get them and then I'll use bird rights to bring my guy back. You don't have bird rights on any of your players. You do have early bird rights, which is something. But if you take a look, you know, for example, at the cap checker at the you know, at the early birds. And again, this is going to change a little bit. And you can find this at the pbsl.ijbl.net/enhanced/check.html or just, sorry, check.htm. The early bird contract limit is $183,145. And that's on a salary cap of $2.3 million. By contrast, if you were looking at a max salary for these players, that max salary is almost $600,000. So you can only offer about a third of a max using early bird rights. So just, again, something to keep in mind in the back of your head. And one quick thing, if you don't want to use the cap checker to kind of keep a quick eye on what the early bird limit is, look at the salary of the number one overall pick. It's very, very close. The difference is $4,000. The early bird contract's $4,000 higher. So that's a little cheat you can use if you just watch the salary of the number one overall pick. That's basically where early bird rights land you. So again, when you're going into free agency and you're preparing to stagger your bids, be aware that if you run up against the cap, you don't have bird rights. You can't bring your own players back. And again, I would reiterate, bear in mind that over the next two seasons, the first two, or the first three, excuse me, rounds of the creation draft are going to come in. This is the Moses Malones, the Magic Johnsons, the Calvin Natts. These are the players you want to give the max to. These are guys that are franchise-altering players. A fifth starter or a sixth man, probably not someone you want to give the max to. Okay, so with all those disclaimers out of the way, I'm going to go through one other thing that I find interesting. And what I did was I took the top 115 players by minutes. I'm not going to show my work. You're just going to have to trust me on this. But essentially, that to me is what is the average starter. So the top 115 players by minutes, even if they're not starting, they're a virtual starter. 23 teams times 5 players, 115 players. And I asked, per 36 minutes, what are your averages? So across the league, the average starting caliber player right now is averaging 18.1 points, 6.3 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1 steal, and 2/3 of a block. So that's kind of the baseline against which I'm judging these guys. If that's your average starter, how do these guys slot in? And we're going to go in the order of minutes played, which means we have the best sample size to be able to project how the current player is going to perform. Again, some of these players are younger, they have room to grow. Some of these players are older, they're going to deteriorate. Again, this is for you to do the homework on. This is just my quick thoughts to get you started. And we will start with the Spurs' Kelvin Ramsey. He's 23. He averaged 36.7 minutes per game. To me, he projects as a low-end combo guard. His assists are a little above average. His scoring is slightly below average. And again, this is per 36. And you know, his rebounds are a little below average, but you expect that for a guard. Steals are right on the money. So again, he's a low-end combo guard. He's a slightly below average combo guard scorer. So, you know, you could slot him at point guard, you could slot him at shooting guard, but that's where he is. He's a low-end combo guard as far as starters go. For the Mavericks, Truck Robinson put in 35.1 minutes per game this season. He's an above-average rebounder. He's pretty average elsewhere. Truck, to me, projects as pretty much an average big man starter with a little bit of extra rebounding drizzled on top. So if you need a big man, even though he's playing as a small forward, because of his rebounding, you could probably bump him up to power forward. Next up is Kevin Greavy. He's 28. He plays for the 76ers. He played for 34.8 minutes per game. That means the numbers that you see from him now are about as good as they're going to get because he's surrounded by really awful teammates. He averaged 13 points a game and 3 rebounds, 2.5 assists. My notes here are he's the worst starter on one of the worst teams. I would be very careful about paying him big money. Next up is Clint Richardson of the Pistons. He's 25 years old, averaged 36 minutes per game. He's an above-average rebounder for a point guard. Everywhere else, he's average to a little bit below average in scoring. So if you're looking for a point guard, especially at his age, he's not a bad choice. But again, he's going to be, you know, he's barely starter level, maybe, you know, in some ways a little above, some ways a little below. But, yeah, he's nothing special. Next up is Phil Ford of the Warriors, 34.4 minutes per game. He's 26 years old. He's basically an average starting point guard. His assists are a little above the average player, but right on the average for point guard. So Phil Ford, average starting point guard, 26 years old, so he's just hitting his prime. You know, if you need a point guard, there's another place to go. Next up is Brian Winters of the Celtics. He's a shooting guard, averaging 33.2 minutes per game. He's a little bit below average everywhere, and he's aging. So I would suspect the Celtics are probably looking to replace him soon. I don't think he's a huge upgrade for most teams, but if you have an absolute hole at shooting guard, you know, he's an option. I'm not very excited by him, to be honest. Next up is the Clippers' George McGinnis. He's 31 and plays power forward. He's above average passing for a power forward. But he's a below-average scorer, and so to me that probably, you know, makes him a below-average player because you don't need a ton of passing coming out of your power forward. So again, you figure the average starter should be your third-best starter. He's a little below average, so he's going to be your fourth or fifth-best starter. Maybe if you're the Lakers, who's desperate for a power forward, he's a guy you look at. But again, none of these guys are terrific. So there you go. George McGinnis is an option at power forward if you have nothing. But if you do have somebody at power forward that you like, he's probably not better. Next up is Johnny Davis of the Hawks. He averaged 32.6 minutes per game. So again, we've still got pretty good sample size on what he can do. He's a scoring point guard, but is really below average on the glass. So if you're a team that already struggles with rebounding, he might not be for you. But if you're a team with strong rebounders, say the Warriors, with Moses Malone and Alton Lister, this could be a guy that you're after. Downside is, of course, he's going into his prime. I don't know how much better he's going to be, but most of these players that are available are going to be going into their prime, so, or a little bit older. Again, these are creation draft players that weren't taken early, so we're not looking for greatness here. We're just looking for passability. I think Johnny Davis, as long as the rest of the team can rebound, will be okay. Not great, just okay. Your one center is next. It's Dave Corzine of the Knicks. I would call him a functional center. He's about average. He's a little bit offensively challenged. If at 25, he's probably going to get a little more demand. Also, the fact that he's the only center really available, probably going to push the price tag up. But I wouldn't break the bank for him unless you have really strong scoring around him. Next up is Maurice Lucas of the Suns. He's 30 years old, so he's starting to come out of his prime. He's probably slightly above average for a power forward, but not an outlier by any means. So, Maurice Lucas is a player that you could definitely spend a decent chunk for. Again, I wouldn't recommend the max. But he's a guy that, if you have problems at power forward, you could do a lot worse than Maurice Lucas, at least in the short term. Next up is Kenny Carr for the Cavaliers. He's 26 years old, plays 31.7 minutes per game. He's slightly above average for a small forward. A little less passing than most star small forwards, but figure the passing number for small forwards are skewed a little bit because Larry Bird and Magic Johnson are playing small forwards, so that kind of pushes the average assists up quite a bit. But I think most teams would be pretty happy to grab Kenny Carr and put him in at the small forward spot. Again, if we're asking, is he your first, second, third, fourth, or fifth best starter? He could be your third best starter. On a good team, he's probably a number four starter. But Kenny Carr is a player I would be willing to pay a little bit for on the free agent market. Brian Taylor of the Nuggets is our next entry here. He played 30 minutes per game. He's the weak link among the Nuggets starters, and he's a little bit offensively challenged. So I think he's probably, at age 30 and being the fifth best starter on his own team, and not because it's a super team, but he's just a fifth best starter. He's probably a number five starter on most teams, maybe even a high bench player on a really good team. I think the reason he's getting that much burn on the Nuggets is they don't have a lot of other options right now. Next up is Mike Bratz of the Jazz. He's 26 years old, averaged 30.2 minutes per game. He's got decent defense, but he's got bad offense for a point guard. So again, this is kind of a fit pick. If you're a team that's struggling offensively, I would be very wary of signing Bratz. If you're a team that's great offensively, needs a point guard and wants a defensive boost, Mike Bratz will be just fine. He's just going into his prime, so you don't have to worry about him falling off for a little while. So I think with Bratz, you're going to get what you're going to get, and that's moves the ball decently, plays good defense, doesn't shoot it a lot. Next up is Clemen Johnson of the Rockets. He's right at 30 minutes per game. He's 25 years old. He's offensively awful, is what I have in my notes here. Remember I said the per 36 for an average starter is 18 points a game. For Clemen, it's 8.4 points a game. So he'll be good as long as you don't need offense. If you've got somebody else who's providing the offense, fine. Otherwise, be a little wary of him. Next up is Wes Unseld of the Pacers. He's 36. He's going to fall off a cliff. He averaged 29.9 minutes per game. With some of these guys, you could probably see them, you know, taking a jump, getting a little better. With Wes Unseld, he's going to get worse. And right now, he is undersized for a big man. He's offensively challenged. And by that, I mean really offensively challenged. We just talked about Clement Johnson averaging 8.4 points per 36 minutes. Wes averages 7.5. I think he's the worst scoring player among all the players that I looked at. So, I'm sure the Pacers will be in the market to replace him very, very soon. But, he's going to be at best a number five starter. Next up is Bill Hanslick. He's 24 on the Bucks. He averaged 28.4 minutes per game. I would project him as a very low-grade starter at best. He's about average in most categories, a little under average in point scoring. That could just be, though, because on the Bucks they have a lot of great scorers around him. So I could see Hanslick doing a little bit better on another team, but he's not going to be a high-grade starter. He's probably best suited to be your fourth or fifth best starter, or better yet, as the Bucks are using him, as a player, sixth or seventh man off the bench. Next up is David Greenwood of the Bullets. He's 24 years old as well. He's averaging 28.3 minutes per game. Another solid young power forward, needs to work a little bit on his scoring, but he's young enough that he's still got some room to grow. Hanslick does too. So these are both players that I think somebody could overpay a little bit for based on potential, but at least right now, this is probably your fourth or fifth starter. Next up is Billy Ray Bates of the Supersonics. He's 25 years old. He's about average. He's about to go into his prime. His ceiling, probably a slightly above average starter. He does a lot of things pretty well. The downside for anybody trying to get him away from the Sonics is the Sonics are not really stocked, so they're probably willing to pay him to keep him around. Next up is Darwin Cook of the Trailblazers, formerly of the Sonics, so had he not gotten traded, he might not be on this list. He's 23. He's a young player with great defense, above average passing, but he's otherwise a little bit below average. And that's above average passing for a shooting guard. But again, his defense is really, really good. He hasn't worked into the Trailblazers rotation. But in terms of all these players that we're talking about, he is the youngest. And so I think if the Trailblazers want to keep him, they're probably going to have to pay a pretty penny. I will keep to myself whether or not we plan to do that. Again, Darwin Cook is the player on the Trailblazers that is averaging the most minutes per game, so we have the best read on him. And the read on him, the plus-minus numbers notwithstanding, bear in mind he was on the Supersonics most of the season. His defense actually does grade out pretty well. Two players left. Edgar Jones of the Bulls is 25. He's averaging 25.9 minutes per game. He's a little bit foul-prone, but an excellent shot blocker. This is a power forward that I think could slot in as about an average power forward. Again, the fouls worry me a little bit, but if you're willing to invest a little bit in foul training, this is, probably a number three out of five starter. Sorry to the Bulls for putting that out there, but I'm just going with what the numbers tell me. And last up is Fred Brown of the Kings. He only averaged 17.1 minutes per game, so this is a very small sample size. Take it with a grain of salt, but he's 33, he's aging, he's going to get worse. And I would call him a below average starter at best. All of his numbers except steals are worse than the average player. You can only expect that as time goes on, he's going to degrade. So that's it. There are a lot of other players out there. I'm going to give names and teams without giving any other information, because this is all something that you could really quickly click on the potential free agents page and see for yourself. But I'm going to say them out loud. So if you hear a name and you think, oh, I know that guy, or oh, I played a game against that guy and he beat me, or oh, whatever it is, you'll be able to kind of go, oh, this is somebody I might want to pay attention to. So other green potential players are Wes Matthews of the 76ers, Billy Knight of the Bucks, John Drew of the Bullets, Swin Nader and Marvin Webster of the Bulls, and also Don Buse of the Bulls, Ricky Sobers and Junior Bridgman of the Celtics, Phil Smith of the Clippers, Mike Evans of the Hawks, Rich Kelly and Pat Cummings of the Jazz, ML Carr, Sly Williams of the Kings, Michael Wiley and Freeman Williams and Bob Lanier of the Knicks, Caldwell Jones of the Mavericks, Michael Corrin, Dudley Bradley and Bobby Jones of the Nuggets, Mike Newland of the Pistons, Rory Sparrow of the Rockets, who I remember as one of the guys who replaced Byron Scott in the Laker lineup years ago, Bob Gross of the Sonics, Juwan Oldham, Don Collins, Bob McAdoo, and Kenny Higgs of the Suns, Jim Spanarkle, going back to my very first pod of the funny name, and Cedric Maxwell of the Trailblazers, and finally Joey Hassett, Mike Glenn, and James Bailey of the Warriors. So again, you know, going into free agency, I think there are a handful of players that can make a difference for teams. I think, you know, there's, again, no player, even among the blue potential players, where when I look at their per 36, I think, oh my gosh, this guy's amazing. All of these guys are, you might find a third starter, but you're looking more at fourth and fifth starters at this point. And in some cases, guys that probably should be coming off the bench. So, you know, again, that's a very quick preview to free agency. We'll probably have one more show or one more pod that goes into the tank sometime in the middle of the playoffs. Looking for ideas for that. I've kind of covered the things that I think are need to know. You know, maybe for that one I'll talk about the proposed new luxury tax system, because I think that's something that we'll probably want to start talking about. We haven't had to deal much with the luxury tax, because when the creation draft happens, everybody's contracts are relatively low. The first free agent period doesn't have much in the way of good players, so nobody's handing out big contracts. I can see some overpays starting to send big contracts toward players this time, but I think really next season is when we're going to start seeing teams having to deal with salary cap ramifications. So it's something we haven't had to deal with yet in the NPBSL, but it's definitely coming as players come off their cheap creation draft contracts and get quote-unquote real contracts and get paid what they probably should have been getting paid in the first place. So that's it for this session. We'll talk to everybody in a week or so. Thanks for putting up with the Cat. And in the meantime, to all the playoff teams that aren't playing the Trailblazers, may you have a successful playoff. If you are playing the Trailblazers, sorry, I hope you lose. Anyway, talk to everyone later.